In the name of the Father, and the Son, and the Holy Spirit. Amen. Team Grace, today on this Trinity Sunday, Mother Church directs our attention to the mystery of God. The mystery of the Holy Trinity reveals to us that God, in his innermost essence, is not solitude, but family. God himself is a community of persons, a divine family. As a human family, we were made in his image. We share the image of the triune God within us. We are therefore called, and we find fulfillment when we form community and spend time with one another, as families, as a parish, as a society, as a nation, and as the overall human family. As a people who are called to fellowship, we have issues, however, that periodically come up and that have to be addressed. It's not easy for us human beings to live together. These issues oftentimes include aspects of justice and charity. What are we owed? What do we owe others? What can we give? What can we reasonably expect to receive? Of the many issues in this realm, I want to speak about immigration, because it's a pressing issue right now and is causing heightened frustration and confusion in our society. As Christians, we need to know clearly what the church teaches on this important matter. I'm going to draw from the teachings of the church, especially the Catechism of the Catholic Church, and address various points relating to immigration. Although the question of immigration is a political issue, it is first and foremost a moral issue, and it is only in this context in which I address immigration. There's no political jargon happening from this pulpit. There's moral teaching, and it's very important as Christians we understand what is right and what is wrong. So first, when we approach immigration, we need to apply both solidarity and subsidiarity, which are two diverse but complementary principles in our Catholic social doctrine. Solidarity teaches us that we are called to be brothers and sisters to all men and women, that we must have an open heart, a loving spirit, and generosity towards everyone we meet. Solidarity emphasizes the natural bond we have among all human beings, since we are all children of God and members of the same human family. Solidarity, however, cannot stand alone. Left to its own devices and taken to extremes, solidarity leads our society to socialism. Socialism violates our natural rights to human dignity and personal identity, to the private ownership of property and capital, and even to religious expression. Solidarity needs subsidiarity. Subsidiarity teaches us that our love, our commitments, and our generosity towards others consist of a series of ever-expanding circles. Solidarity begins in our spiritual lives, where we encounter God and possess ourselves. It is only by encountering God that we know who we are, that we have a self-possession. Our self-possession then calls us to self-donation. I can't give myself to another if I do not have myself. So it begins in our encounter with God. Such an autonomy is the foundation of every other relationship we have, since we love others as we love ourselves. And if we don't have ourselves, we can't love others. This autonomy, however, is not sovereign. It interacts and is dependent upon others. For many, this begins with a spouse and family. The possession of one's spiritual heart broadens and then includes marriage and children. Subsidiarity guides this movement of the heart. From the family, we then have intermediate groups, such as houses of worship, neighborhoods, workplaces, and civic organizations. Only then do we reach society, and then states and countries, and finally the world as a community of nations. Subsidiarity guards the lower communities from any encroachment by the larger communities. Subsidiarity reminds us to pay attention first to the group that is most immediate to us and then move to the other groups. Could you imagine parents who feed the children of their neighbors without first feeding their own children? So subsidiarity teaches us start with the innermost group, that inner circle, and then begin to expand. Subsidiarity reminds us again to pay attention to those in front of us. Left to its own devices, however, and taken to extremes, subsidiarity can lead a society to fascism. Fascism violates our natural rights to assemble with others and form families, to have free ideas and freedom of speech, and to exercise self-determination. Subsidiarity needs solidarity, and again, vice versa. Subsidiarity reminds us charity begins at home, while solidarity tells us but it doesn't stop there. The two principles are needed for a morally healthy and vibrant society. They are both key to our discernment and prudential judgments on all issues, including immigration. As we weigh in on the issue of immigration, we must apply both subsidiarity and solidarity. It's what our bishop calls glocal. First time he met with us, he said, do you know, to the priest, he said, do you know this word glocal? We all thought it was some type of word in Creole or something, right? Our bishop's Haitian, so it's like, no, we don't know that one. He said, glocal, it's an English word. It's a glocal, it's local and global together, right? Solidarity, subsidiarity, glocal, global and local. Okay, good, good. You see why our bishop's a good teacher, huh? We must balance the well-being of one group of people seeking a better life with the effects of immigration on the society who welcomes them. So there's two groups who are both seeking a common good, those who desire to enter a nation and those who already live in that nation. Neither group has a monopoly on moral good. Both groups and their legitimate hopes and concerns must be considered if a morally sound decision is to be made that honors both moral truth and the common good. Some time ago, I was speaking with a Christian social worker who had a heart for the poor, the forgotten, and the displaced. The work of this holy woman spoke for itself as she poured herself out in selfless service to others. In our conversation, the social worker expressed her frustration with other Christians who appeared not to care about those in need. In particular, she was upset about the diversity of views on immigration and the care of the displaced. She believed in a broad and open approach to immigration. In anger, she said to me, I just wish that those with such strict views on immigration would pray. I wish they would spend some time in conversation with the Lord. Don't they understand that lives are at stake? I waited and let this love-filled advocate voice her frustrations and concerns. After a little while, I finally responded, well, maybe they did pray. Maybe they took other factors into account and have different views for good reasons. What do you mean, Father? She asks. Don't you realize that lives are at stake? Yes, I responded. Lives are at stake on both sides. Maybe those with stricter views on immigration are taking into account the well-being of the people here, such as those in the working class or those on government assistance. We can't just be concerned about the southern border, dear friends. We have to also be concerned about our neighbors right down Highway 521. 63% of our neighbors are under the national poverty level. Glocal. We care about our local, but we also care about the global issues. Needless to say, the conversation with this social worker did not go well. As much as I tried to show that good people can have different views on immigration and that good people can have strict views on immigration for good reasons, it was not well received. The simple point that someone could disagree with our views and not be a monster who is obsessed with greed or self-interest was not readily accepted. The idea that others have discerned the issue and seen things from a different perspective was considered a betrayal rather than an opportunity for dialogue, learning, and a better solution founded upon prudence to the issue of immigration. In our prudential discernment on immigration, we are assisted by the moral teachings of the church. In particular, exercising both solidarity and subsidiarity, the church calls for generosity in welcoming immigrants, while also calling for a consideration of the true capacity of a prospective host country to welcome them. Again, both. Both are being taken into account. The church directs the more prosperous nations of the world to be generous in their immigration laws and policies. The church even speaks in terms of a moral obligation in welcoming the foreigner and respecting the natural rights of others, especially those who seek asylum or protection. Such a summons must be taken seriously, as a nation's wealth is a blessing that must be responsibly shared with others. All nations are edified and enriched by immigrants. They bring a diversity of views that enhance a nation's moral and cultural fabric. As such, immigrants should be readily and generously received and accepted by the various nations of the world. The Catechism teaches, quote, the more prosperous nations are obliged, to the extent that they are able, to welcome the foreigner in search of the security and the means of livelihood which he cannot find in his country of origin. Public authorities should see to it that the natural right is respected at places a guest under the protection of those who receive him. So here the church is noting that prosperous nations must be generous. However, listen to what the church says. However, the church notes, the generosity of nations must be according to the extent that they are able. You see, subsidiarity, solidarity. Solidarity, yes, help everyone, be generous. Subsidiarity, to the extent that you are able. By extension, while the church acknowledges the natural right of people to immigrate, especially in their efforts to provide basic human needs for themselves and their families, the church also teaches that political leadership can impose various juridic conditions upon a person's natural right to immigrate into their nation. Such juridic conditions are an exercise of justice to the common good under the care of the authority of the deciding political leadership. So political leaders of a particular nation have to take care of their own. And then they can see, what can we reasonably do in terms of welcoming others to become part of our nation? So for example, the political leaders of the United States should care first about the people of the United States. The political leadership of Canada should first care about the people of Canada. The political leadership of Mexico should care first for the people of Mexico. And then assessing, what can we reasonably do, pushing ourselves to generosity, we then welcome the immigrant. That will then become a part of our society. The church's wisdom allows for a certain prudential discernment by a society and its political leadership. In essence, the generosity of a nation must flow out of the initial care and well-being of the current citizens of a nation. The church further confirms this authority of political leadership by insisting any of its decisions must be done for the sake of the common good for which they are responsible. That's very important, Team Grace. The church is saying here that the political leadership has to be first responsible for those under their care. Again, the political leadership of one nation cares first for its own citizens and then pushes itself to be generous to others. By extension, while the church acknowledges the natural right of people to immigrate, and we do, as Catholics, we know God gives the right for someone to relocate in order to provide for basic needs for themselves and their families. Yet, the church also teaches that political leadership can impose various juridic conditions upon a person's natural right to immigrate into their nation. A country can say, we can only take this many a year, or we only need this type of person. So for example, we need laborers, or we need skilled artisans, or various things. The church is saying that a nation has that right. The political leadership of a country has that right to do that, because first they have to care for their own citizenry, and then again they expand that to those that they are able. The Catechism teaches, quote, political authorities, for the sake of the common good for which they are responsible, may make the exercise of the right to immigrate subject to various juridic conditions, especially with regards to the immigrant's duties toward their country of adoption. What is the immigrant going to contribute to this common good? Immigrants are obliged to respect with gratitude the material and spiritual heritage of the country that receives them. So if a group of immigrants come into a country and they create a small silo of their former homeland, then that violates the social teachings of the church. Obviously, they can keep some aspect of their home country, some aspect of their home culture, but the church is saying that the immigrant has to integrate into their new homeland. The church goes on to say, immigrants are obliged to respect with gratitude the material and spiritual heritage of the country that receives them, to obey its laws, and to assist in carrying civic burdens. You know what that means, right? Taxes, yeah. Immigrants are expected to pay taxes, right? These aspects of the church's teaching show the delicate balance between generosity and genuine capacity, between care of immigrants and an attention to the citizens of a country, between natural rights and the exercise of those rights, and ultimately between solidarity and subsidiarity. The task is to allow these different aspects to complement, mold, and shape each other into a fair and just body of laws and policies for both the immigrant community and the current citizenry of a nation. Such a task is never easy. It is rarely perfect in a fallen world, which is marked by fluidity and uncertainty. While often purposely merged together by some social commentators, there is a clear difference in the church's teaching between legal immigrants and illegal immigrants. And that distinction is oftentimes blurred. The church, there is no blurring. Political leadership, exercising the authority entrusted to it, prudently evaluates, concludes, and promulgates the laws and policies on immigration. The country is bound by God to look and to say, what can we reasonably do in light of our current state of affairs in our country? These laws are within the virtue of justice and are morally binding on people. Christians are obliged to obey the just laws of their homeland. Violations of just laws are rightly followed by punitive intervention by law enforcement agencies of the nations involved. If you break the law, there should be consequences. Constantly we're hearing this, our immigration system is broken. How do you know if it's broken if it hasn't been tried? We have so many laws that are not even being enforced. How do we know what's working and what's broken if it's not even being obeyed? Listen to the Catechism, quote, "Those subject to authority should regard those in authority as representatives of God, who has made them stewards of his gifts. Their loyal collaboration includes the right, and at times the duty, to voice their just criticisms of that which seems harmful to the dignity of persons and to the good of the community." So the church is saying that we have to obey the law, even as we can rally to change the law, but we cannot break the law as Christians. With that said, the church is adamant that all people, regardless of their legal status, must have their human dignity respected. As such, they deserve a level of care that provides for their basic human needs, such as food, urgent medical care, and shelter. As a moral teacher, the church also calls on the integrity of the family to be acknowledged and preserved during immigration processes by law enforcement agencies. Of course, children must be protected and groups claiming to be families must be authenticated. You see how there's always the back and forth, right? Even as the church supports the rights of nations to create and enforce enforce immigration laws, she calls on world leaders and societies to avoid nurturing any fear of foreigners. She further denounces any and all forms of discrimination, injustice, or violence against immigrants, legal or illegal. Pope St. John Paul II had this to say, quote, "The church acts in continuity with Christ's mission. In particular, she asks herself how to meet the needs while respecting the law of those persons who are not allowed to remain in the national territory." So again, he's trying to balance subsidiarity and solidarity. So how do we respect the law while also providing for the basic needs of those who are here illegally? The church calls on the nations of the world to address the reasons for immigration and to propose solutions to the economic, political, and social causes that force widespread immigration from certain countries of the world or regions of the world. And so the balance between the support of just laws and the care of immigrants are equally supported and insisted upon by the church. While prudence and justice might be applied to immigration policies and laws, there can never be willful or socially approved mistreatment or misrepresentation of immigrants. In the church's tradition, any harm or brutalization of immigrants is included in a small set of grave sins known as the sins that cry to heaven for vengeance. The cry of an oppressed person, especially a foreigner, is heard by God as the cry of a suppliant, namely a person who has no other protection or resources other than God's providence. Such mistreatment, however, should not be falsely applied to just laws that prudently limit immigration, as well as efforts to enforce those laws. I want to stress this point. If you have hired someone that does not have legal status in our nation, and you have purposely paid them a lower cost, or if you have mocked a foreigner or deprived a foreigner of simple things like water or food, listen to this, Team Grays. That is only one of four sins that is placed by the church as a sin that cries to heaven for vengeance. That's not just a mortal sin where your soul is going to hell. That's a cry for vengeance. You call upon God's justice, severe and swift. If you mistreat an immigrant, you need to be aware there's only four of those. And one of those is the mistreatment of an immigrant. If you have purposely deprived someone of a just wage because you can give them something lower, pay them cheaply because they're illegal, you have some repenting to do. And if you've noticed you did that and all of a sudden your finances went completely crazy or your health just failed and all kinds of stuff and there's massive chaos in your family, that's called temporal punishment. Do not call upon the vengeance of God, because it is swift and severe. And the mistreatment of an immigrant is a cry for vengeance. And that's right from the Catechism of the Catholic Church. As we see the complexity of the issue of immigration, we realize the need and the importance of the virtue of prudence. Christian believers and people of goodwill are called to know the multifaceted and diverse aspects relating to immigration in our world. As such, they must apply justice and right judgment to their deliberations and discernment. Again, that justice is to people at the southern border, as well as it is justice to the people down Highway 521. People of faith and goodwill naturally welcome others and embrace those who are different from them. My goodness, especially we as Catholics. You know the expression, when you say, here comes the Catholic Church, you say, here comes everybody, right? We are all colors and nations and peoples, all languages. So as Christians, we welcome all people. Such an openness needs the help of prudence, which assesses the best possible good in a given state of affairs. Good people must be welcoming, but they must also be prudential. There must be solidarity, but also subsidiarity. We need both. And dear friends, these are just some main points from our teachings on immigration. And of course, as we try to address this as a nation, I hope that some of these points will be helpful to you. The big task is to remember that nothing is so easy, and there's no perfect immigration policy in a fallen world, that we are constantly balancing between solidarity and subsidiarity. How do we welcome those into our nation while also caring for those who are currently here? How do we take care of our neighbors down Highway 521 and help the people and families at the southern border? And that's a delicate balance. As Christians, we have the constant call for charity and justice, and we have to be actively involved in our society, guiding our political leadership to make good decisions. Decisions, again, that are both reflective of solidarity and subsidiarity.